It is Friday, July the 20th. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. Coming up, President Trump inviting Russia's Putin to the U.S. this fall.
Doesn't seem to be the maybe most politically astute thing that Trump could do, but he seems to have his fixation with Russia.
Turkey accusing a U.S. pastor of terrorism and espionage.
We have seen what we've expected all along, that this is a sham trial. There is no evidence.
Israel passing a controversial law, plus a little something from the world of music. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. Even as he pushes back against criticism of his Helsinki summit with Vladimir Putin, President Trump says he wants to meet again with the Russian leader. We get more now from AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani.
The president says the summit was a great success to everybody but the news media, whom he's accusing of trying to provoke a confrontation with Moscow that could lead to war. But there is bipartisan concern about what was said, since it was just the two presidents and their interpreters.
It is utterly amazing that no one knows what was said. This is a democracy.
Top Senate Democrat Chuck Schumer, GOP Senator Lindsey Graham says the president needs to be careful.
It's imperative that he understand that he's misjudging Putin.
The president says he wants another meeting with Putin to start implementing some ideas. Sagar Magani, Washington.
And seemingly unaffected by criticism over that Helsinki summit, President Trump has extended that invitation to Russian President Vladimir Putin to meet in Washington in the fall. The announcement of the invitation came as the White House sought to clean up days of confounding statements on Russian interference in the 2016 U.S. election that sent Mr. Trump to the White House. The president's public doubting of Russia's responsibility in a joint news conference with Mr. Putin on Monday provoked withering criticism from Democrats and Republicans alike. Former U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry was interviewed by CBS's Margaret Brennan.
I found it shocking. I found it to be one of the most disgraceful, remarkable moments of kowtowing to a foreign leader by an American president that anyone has ever witnessed. And it wasn't just that it was a kind of surrender, it's that it is dangerous.
Yet the criticism might have forced President Trump to make a rare public admission of error. Interviewed by CBS's Jeff Glor, Mr. Trump talked about Russian interference in the 2016 U.S. election.
Very strong on the fact that we can't have meddling, we can't have any of that. Now, look, President Obama supposedly made a strong statement, nobody heard it, but I let him know we can't have this. We're not going to have it, and that's the way it's going to be.
For some insight into this week's Trump-Putin summit in Helsinki and the events that followed, VOA's Lori London speaks with Jeffrey Mankoff, senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
The back and forth since the meeting and since the press conference is, I think, just more evidence of this kind of inability to get the story straight and to stay on script. So it's not the proudest moment in American diplomacy, let's put it that way.
There have been a lot of analysts trying to figure out what's going on here, but there has been a common theme that sort of seemed to emerge in the past week that we really haven't heard prominent people say, including former CIA directors, and that was that it would seem that the president could potentially be compromised, that this foreign nation could potentially have something on our president, given his inability to criticize Vladimir Putin and sort of putting in a moral equivalent with the United States and Russia.
I don't know anything more than anybody else. I think it's speculation at this point. There's an investigation that's going on by the special counsel that presumably is aiming to get to the bottom of this issue and hopefully will provide a clear picture of what's going on at some point. I think up until we know what that clear picture is, there's a lot of innuendo, but I don't know that we can conclude anything definitive from it.
And the president also stated that he has been stronger on Russia than any other president in U.S. history. Do you have any statistics to confirm that or dispute it?
it's a fundamentally impressionistic statement, so I don't think there is a way to prove or disprove it. I would say that the Trump's own personal approach to Russia has not been particularly tough. He's been pushed into taking steps vis-a-vis Russia that have been more confrontational than I think he has been comfortable with, and we saw that with the sanctions bill that was passed by Congress, the so-called CATSA legislation. We saw it with the decision to provide lethal military assistance to Ukraine. But those are all things that have sort of happened almost despite Trump rather than because of him.
We also just learned that the White House is making plans for Russian President Vladimir Putin to come to Washington in the fall. Apparently that was an invitation extended by President Trump, and now we have confirmation from the White House that there are indeed plans moving forward to have him come to the White House. Would someone like you see any national security concerns, or where would you stand on something like that?
I don't think heads of state meeting per se is a problem. I think, as we saw with the meeting in Helsinki, poorly prepared meetings with people who are prone to go off script and not prepare in advance are liable to create uncomfortable moments. And I think given the particular pathologies that Trump is apparently subject to on this issue, the potential for another fiasco like the one that we saw in Helsinki is real.
What about the fact that it's so close to the midterm elections and Russia's already accused of meddling in our elections? And I would imagine if a world leader like that came to the U.S., we'd be rolling out the red carpet to some degree.
Well, I think it would be a political football. I think there would be a lot of political backlash, as there was with the Helsinki meeting, only more so because if you're doing it in the United States and in the run-up to an election, there's going to be that much more focus on it. So I think the potential for it to really kind of feed into the tension over all things Russia in American domestic politics is real. And in that sense, it's doesn't seem to be the maybe most politically astute thing that Trump could do, but he seems to have his fixation with Russia and is going to do what he's going to do.
Jeffrey Mankoff is a senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He was speaking with VOA's Lori London. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Next up, Ethiopia and Eritrea resolve to normalize relations. We examine next steps and implications of this diplomatic breakthrough with Ambassador Hank Cohen, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, and Ambassador David Shin, former ambassador to Ethiopia. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This is VOA's International Edition. As Turkey ended its two-year state of emergency that followed the 2016 failed coup, a Turkish court held a third hearing in the case of American Protestant minister Andrew Brunson. He has been in prison for 2 years there on terrorism and espionage charges related to the attempted coup. Brunson, who has lived in Turkey for 20 years, denied any wrongdoing. Late Wednesday this week, in a tweet, President Trump called on his Turkish counterpart, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, to release Brunson, saying he has been a hostage for too long. Cece Heil is executive senior counsel of the Nashville-based American Center for Law and Justice, which has been handling the Brunson case. She tells VOA's Victor Beatty Turkey has failed to offer any concrete evidence to suggest Brunson's guilt.
So when this trial process began on April 16th with the first trial date, and then May 7th with the second trial date, and now July 18th for the third trial date, we have seen what we've expected all along, that this is a sham trial. There is no evidence. We have secret witnesses that have been discredited. Not one of the witnesses has been able to provide one shred of evidence. And basically, Pastor Brunson has effectively been denied the ability to even put on a defense. However, saying that, there was indication that this might be the court date where Pastor Brunson is released. Even the Turkish news was reporting that diplomats in Ankara expected Pastor Brunson to be released at this trial date.
They keep bringing up these so-called anonymous witnesses. Why are they doing that, do you think?
Because that totally strips Pastor Brunson the ability to discredit these witnesses, really, because his Turkish attorney is not able to know their identity. So there's no way to attack what they're saying because they're not allowed to know who it is. The judges, it's made up of three on the panel. They have made it very clear that they are taking everything that the prosecution's witnesses are saying as absolute truth. And when they've been challenged on that, well, don't they have to provide evidence? They said, nope, they are under oath, and we are taking everything they say as truth.
As you indicated, he's been in jail since 2016. This hearing now is not for another 3 months. You're suggesting that perhaps he may be released at the time. Why the delay?
Political trials in Turkey typically take anywhere from 2 to 10 years. And this is the way the Turkish courts work. You'll have, as we've seen, you know, the first trial date, just one day on April 16th, then they adjourn. And that time it was till May 7th, so about a month later. And then they adjourn to July 18th, which was about 2 months later. And now they're adjourning till October, which is 3 months later. And it's just a way to continue to drag these cases out.
Is he really a pawn in this larger issue about the extradition of the Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen, who the Turkish government believes was the mastermind of this failed coup? Is this all linked?
It certainly seems so, because President Erdogan himself has demanded on multiple occasions the swap of Fethullah Gulen, who has lived in Pennsylvania since the late 1990s, and the cleric that he blames for the failed coup attempt, for Pastor Brunson. And so it looks like, especially now that we know absolutely, which we've known along, there is no case against him, there is no evidence, it looks pretty clear that he's being held as a political hostage.
Cece Heil is executive senior counsel of the American Center for Law and Justice. She was speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty. Israel has passed legislation that has been welcomed by Jewish nationalists but condemned by Arab citizens. We get more now from Robert Berger in Jerusalem.
The Knesset, Israel's parliament, approved a new law that defines the country as the nation-state of the Jewish people. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said it is a historic moment in the history of Zionism and the state of Israel. Netanyahu said Israel's enemies have been trying to delegitimize its existence, but now Jewish statehood is enshrined in law. Long live the state of Israel, he declared. While Netanyahu's right-wing coalition partners are elated, Israeli Arabs, who make up 20% of the population, are outraged. Arab legislator Ahmed Tibi says the new law is racist.
The nationality bill is a hate crime. They are totally discriminating against the Arab citizens, against the Arab minority.
Netanyahu said minorities have full rights in Israel, but he noted that the majority also has rights. He said the law ensures the Jewish majority for generations to come. But critics say the bill does enormous damage to the state of Israel, whose image abroad is already battered due to its alleged mistreatment of the Palestinians. In a radio interview, Israeli political scientist Shlomo Avineri said the last thing Israel needs is more bad publicity.
He said the law accomplishes nothing other than providing ammunition to Israel's detractors, including those who accuse the Jewish state of apartheid. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
U.S. State Department's International Religious Freedom Report documented in China the repression of Uyghur Muslims and Tibetan Buddhists. VOA State Department correspondent Nike Ching spoke with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo about the Chinese government assertion that some of the groups are separatists. She asked Mr. Pompeo if the U.S. would consider a travel ban or working with the U.S. Treasury Department to freeze the U.S. assets of those Chinese officials who were involved in such repression.
So the State Department has made clear that with respect to this issue, we think they're on the wrong side of religious freedom, that they're a country of concern connected to that. We understand that religious freedom is at risk in many places in the world. And yet the United States has complex, broad relationships with many countries, including China, across economic and military and political sets of issues. Your viewers should know the United States also puts religious freedom, this fundamental human right, at the very center of our discussions with every country with whom we interact.
Religious freedom is a universal value, as you mentioned. How would you respond to a Chinese assertion that some of the surveillance program is to prevent a terrorist attack?
Well, I don't want to comment. Every country does work to make sure that their citizens are safe. But we should never, no country should ever use that effort, the guise of a counterterrorism investigation, to persecute religious freedom. Religious freedom is separate and apart from that. Every human, by nature of their dignity as a human being, deserves the capacity to worship in the way that they want to worship. Or if they choose not to worship at all, so be it. No one should be punished by their government for the religious beliefs or the religious activities connected to those beliefs.
That is U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. He was speaking with VOA's Nike Ching. This is VOA.
This is BizBeat.
Learn a trade and you'll always have a job. These young men are learning how to cut hair at the Granville Boys High School in Sydney. And while learning a craft, these young men are learning respect. Charles Lomu is the workshop facilitator.
Teaching them how to apply those values to yourself, to your space, to the work you do, and to your service to others.
The idea started in a garage, and after some private and government funding, it's now in school for the first time. Linda O'Brien is the school principal at Granville.
I hope that there'll be a greater engagement with school, that they'll see more reason to do school, and that their learning will grow.
With the success of this program, there could be more projects like this in more schools, and that's just fine with student Hussein Hauser.
Everyone hates school on a Monday morning, waking up after Sunday. I'm excited to jump out of bed, come straight to the barbershop.
For VOA's BizBeat, I'm Philip Alexio.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. It's time now for a little something from the world of music. Matthews is a South African-born American singer-songwriter, musician, and actor, best known as the lead vocalist, songwriter, and guitarist for the Dave Matthews Band.
Chasing everything underneath the place.
1991 to 2003, Matthews predominantly focused on songwriting and performing with the Dave Matthews Band, which he started in Charlottesville, Virginia in 1991. Since then, he has also done various solo performances and worked a lot with renowned guitarist Tim Reynolds, touring the world over, performing such hits as Satellite. Dave Matthews mainly plays acoustic guitar, which he started playing at the age of 9. He's won 2 Grammy Awards, one in 1997 for Best Rock Vocal Performance for a Duo or Group, and one in 2004 for Best Male Rock Vocal Performance, performances like Crash Into Me. Appeared on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert on CBS, where he talked about being out on the road performing for more than 25 years.
I feel like we've gone from when they used to hold lighters up, mm-hmm. and that would look like stars and it was pretty, mm-hmm. and now they hold cell phones up and it's also pretty, but it's more consistent. It's more digital. It's like digital stars. It's not quite as candle flame. It's still lovely because they sort of move, and that's nice. But I feel like that's why I feel old time, because I'm from the days of fire.
Matthews married longtime girlfriend Ashley Harper. That was in 2000. They have 2 daughters and a son, and they live in Seattle, Washington. Dave Matthews donates generously to liberal causes such as gay rights, and in 2004 first came out in favor of a presidential candidate, but always says what's more important than anything else is that everyone vote. And many have. They voted for Dave Matthews and his band and great songs like Two Step, which they perform for tens of thousands at New York Central Park. Talk to people who were at that Central Park concert, you know, like 60,000 people, hot night, you know. I love it, don't you? No, not at all. Anyway, nice hearing from Dave Matthews. And thank you for listening here to the Voice of America's International Edition. Always good to have you here. The latest world news is just around the corner. Hope that you'll stay tuned. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Carl Starling, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. We hope you have a super Friday. Now a bit more from Dave Matthews.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Ebola survivors in Sierra Leone will have some much-needed help in recovering from the deadly disease through the assistance of the United States. On July 28th, U.S. Ambassador to Sierra Leone, Maria Brewer, gave opening remarks during a handover ceremony of 19 categories of specialized medicines worth $215,000 to support emerging needs and medical care for Ebola survivors. These medicines are a donation from the United States government through the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID. The ceremony took place at the University of Sierra Leone Teaching Hospital Complex, Connaught Hospital, and underscored the United States government's support for the Ministry of Health and Sanitation health system strengthening efforts during the post-Ebola recovery period. The United States government donation of medicines to the Ministry of Health and Sanitation is a symbol of our greater commitment to promoting and supporting the Global Health Security Agenda, or GHSA. GHSA provides an innovative, proactive approach to prevent, detect, and respond to future disease outbreaks. The medicines will be available in 20 hospitals nationwide to populations covered under the Sierra Leone Government Free Healthcare Initiative. These medicines will help treat a number of medical conditions experienced by Ebola virus disease survivors, which are also common among the general Sierra Leone population, such as eye care, mental health and neurology, ear, nose, and throat conditions, and joint pain. Overall, U.S. government investments in the health sector contribute directly to the new government of Sierra Leone's priorities, as outlined in the new direction, One Country, One People, with a focus on strengthening service delivery and expanding and improving free health care to vulnerable populations. More specifically, by making these specialty medicines available, the Ministry of Health and Sanitation can improve access to specialized care at the national and district levels, which is expected in the long term to strengthen the referral system between primary health care and hospitals. The United States is proud to work with its partner Sierra Leone to improve health care and disease prevention for the wonderful people of Sierra Leone.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
I'm Lori London. This is VOA.